Well, it fits with what I'm going to say, Darren.
Brilliant.
Because God's great plan, God's great promise was that we should be debt-free. And that is right at the centre of the message today, but the message down the running centuries, even millennia, that I want to look at this morning. So we're at the end, the later years of Abraham's life, and it brings to a close about 100 years of history, if the figures are right. Starting back when Abraham and Sarah, or Abram and Sarai, left Haran and headed south under God's instruction back in chapter 12. Into a land which God had promised them, but in which they owned nothing, until actually right at the end where we are now. Okay, now I'm going to read chapter 23. Sorry, I'm not going to read it. I borrowed David Suchet to read it, because he reads it much better than me. So I'm hoping this works. Chapter 23, and then jumping chapter 24 and on to 25, the first chunk. So let's see what happens. Challenge, technical team.
Genesis chapter 23. Sarah lived to be 127 years old. She died at Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and to weep over her. Then Abraham rose from beside his dead wife and spoke to the Hittites. He said, I am a foreigner and stranger among you. Sell me some property for a burial site here, so I can bury my dead. The Hittites replied to Abraham, Sir, listen to us. You are a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will refuse you his tomb for burying your dead. Then Abraham rose and bowed down before the people of the land, the Hittites. He said to them, If you are willing to let me bury my dead, then listen to me and intercede with Ephron, son of Zohar, on my behalf. So he will sell me the cave of Machpelah, which belongs to him and is at the end of his field. Ask him to sell it to me for the full price as a burial site among you. Ephron the Hittite was sitting among his people, and he replied to Abraham in the hearing of all the Hittites who had come to the gates of his city. No, my lord, he said. Listen to me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it. I give it to you in the presence of my people. Bury your dead. Again Abraham bowed down before the people of the land, and he said to Ephron in their hearing, Listen to me. If you will, I will pay the price of the field. Accept it from me, so I can bury my dead there. Ephron answered Abraham, Listen to me, my lord. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver. But what is that between you and me? Bury your dead. Abraham agreed to Ephron's terms and weighed out for him the price he had named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver, according to the weight current among the merchants. So Ephron's field in Machpelah, near Mamre, both the field and the cave in it, and all the trees within the borders of the field, was legally made over to Abraham as his property, in the presence of all the Hittites who had come to the gate of the city. Afterwards, Abraham buried his wife Sarah in the cave in the field of Machpelah, near Mamre, which is at Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave in it were legally made over to Abraham by the Hittites as a burial site.
So then chapter 24 covers the story of Isaac and Rebekah. After Sarah's death, Abraham arranges for a marriage of his son Isaac, but we're going to skip past that and go straight to chapter 25.
Genesis chapter 25. Abraham had taken another wife, whose name was Keturah. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Jokshan was the father of Sheba and Dedan. The descendants of Dedan were the Ashurites and Letushites and the Leumites. The sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanok, Abida, and Eldea. All these were descendants of Keturah. Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac. But while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines and sent them away from his son Isaac to the land of the east. Abraham lived 175 years. Then Abraham breathed his last and died at a good old age, an old man and full of years, and he was gathered to his people. His sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre in the field of Ephron, son of Zohar the Hittite, the field Abraham had bought from the Hittites. There Abraham was buried with his wife Sarah. After Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac, who then lived near Beer Lahairoi.
Okay, great story. Now, it's interesting, isn't it, looking back over history. I can see it in my own life, now I've reached this great age. That hinge points become clear, don't they, as you look back, and significant turning points and key personalities become clear with a perspective of time. And I'm sure Abraham and Sarah would never have realized the significance of their nomadic lives in the land of Canaan, but we, looking back, and many generations who precede us, have got vantage point of history looking back. And what I want to do now, and this is maybe where the debt-free bit comes in, I want to look back to the chain of events that started way back in the Garden of Eden and culminated. We're coming up to Christmas, aren't we? It culminated with the birth of Jesus Christ and the promises that trickle down through the years. I know this is something that James Rose picked up on a couple of weeks ago. But first, let's just have a quick scan through the story of Sarah and Abraham. So it's Sarah who goes first, who reaches the age of 127. Amazing age. I'm 65. If you double that, that's 130. Incredible, isn't it? But I don't want to go into ages particularly now. James touched on it. But we must be careful, not just with ages, but in many ways, when we read these ancient writings, that we don't impose our rational scientific understanding of numbers and years and so on. Numbers were often used in a symbolic way in those times. So we take it 127. She was a good age, and she dies in Hebron. And naturally, Abraham comes to grieve and weep for her. And there then follows this interesting exchange between Abraham and the Hittite people of that area. And he ends up buying the first piece of real estate that he's ever owned in his life, as far as we know. He was a sojourner in the land, a nomad. But now he actually buys something. And clearly Abraham was somebody, in modern parlance, he seemed to fully understand that there's no such thing as a free lunch. Maybe something that is not understood by some members of the current government, but there's a lesson here that actually we touched on this with the young people's group a couple of weeks ago in the book of Kings, looking at Naaman, but the story of Naaman and Elisha. We must not take credit for things that God has done for us. Boy, do I need to learn that lesson for me personally. God blesses us, doesn't he? Has blessed me in so many ways, and it's very easy to think, well, didn't I do well? It's not like that. And you know, we skipped over this story actually a few chapters before. I think it's Genesis 14, where Abraham, with just 318 members of his household, took on the combined armies of four kings and defeated them. But the victory was entirely God's. And Abraham understood that. And he refused absolutely anything. It says, not even a thread or a bootstrap would he accept from the king of Sodom, who was wanted to reward him handsomely for winning back his city and his kingdom. And why was that? Well, it says in chapter 14, this is Abraham speaking, so that you will never be able to say, I made Abraham rich. He neither wanted to take any credit for the victory, nor did he want in any sense the king of Sodom to hold any sway over him. And maybe that those are lessons for us in our interaction and the opportunities that arise for us. And here the Hittites acknowledge that Abraham is a mighty prince among us. Well, why was he a mighty prince? He was a mighty prince because God had made him that. God had blessed him through his life, through his righteousness, the way he'd lived his life. God had made him what he was. And when it came to a tomb, a place to bury his wife, he wanted to own it legally. He didn't want it as a gift. He didn't want anything, any semblance that he would owe the Hittites any favor. And he goes through this negotiation with Ephron. They agree a price. He pays it, and the deal is done at the gate of the city, a public place where everyone came in and out. It was a place where legal transactions were witnessed. Everybody could see and hear what was done. It was a legal process. And Sarah is then buried in the cave at Machpelah, which then is the burial place for Abraham, and in their time Isaac and his wife Rebekah, and Jacob and his wife Leah, they're all buried in that same cave. So then we move on to chapter 25, to Abraham's passing at a good old age, it says, an old man and full of years, recorded as 175 years. Wow. But just in those verses, there's also some interesting history recorded, which I just want to focus in on a little bit. First, Abraham marries again a woman called Keturah, and six sons are added to the family, so that in total, Abraham has eight sons, if you add in Isaac and Ishmael. But then there are more unnamed sons of concubines. It's interesting, isn't it? Abraham, this great man of faith and significant historical figure in God's plan down through history. But we wouldn't really want him to be an elder of the church here, would we? A leader here in concubines? Anyway, Abraham passes on and he makes provision for his various sons, named and unnamed. He gives them gifts, but, and this is important, it's Isaac who inherits, as it says, quote unquote, everything that Abraham owned. Okay, now, this is where I want to go back to this subject of promise and have a look at that. And the story starts, as I say, back in the mysterious Garden of Eden. The man and the woman have been deceived by the serpent, a serpent who represents in some way the root of sin, of all that denies and contradicts God, all that deceives, fake news, trickery. And the man and the woman had been deceived, and they'd eaten the fruit from the tree that God had commanded them not to touch. And after that, God speaks to the man. He kind of sentences the man, the woman, and the serpent. And he says to the serpent this, in chapter 3 of Genesis, verse 15, he says, "And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He will bruise your head, you will bruise his heel." Now, I've kind of borrowed the words from the Authorized Version. The word seed comes in, and I wonder if it's an unusual, we don't really use it nowadays. It means descendants, it means offspring, and the modern translators tend to drop those words in place, which is fine, it's correct. What I wanted to do was to trace this word seed down through some of the history. And if you read the AV, good old AV, they consistently translate the Hebrew word for zera, the word for seed, is translated as seed. They don't vary from that, which is quite helpful when you're studying these things. And this sentence introduces God's plan of salvation, that the time would come where the seed of the woman would bruise the head of the serpent. It was maybe God's plan B. I don't know. If that hadn't have happened in the garden, would it have worked differently? Who knows? But the point is that Jesus is the seed. And we want to follow that down. And as we move into Christmas, it's Jesus who is the seed. It's the Jesus who gives us the guarantee that we can be debt-free in the spiritual sense. You need to go to Darren for the financial advice, but Jesus is the guarantor of our freedom from sin. So, following on from the Garden of Eden, the story traces through Cain and Abel, the Tower of Babel, down to Noah and the Great Flood, and then there's a raft of long list of men and their sons and their sons' sons and so on, all the way down to a man called Terah, who lived in a city of Ur on the river Euphrates in southern Mesopotamia, and he had three sons, one of whom was Abram. And it's to Abram that God clearly set out the promise. I'm just going to read this. Chapter 12, where we started all those weeks ago, verses 2 and 3, God says, I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great. You will be a blessing, and I will bless them that bless you, and curse them that curse you. And this is a bit that I want to highlight. And in you, that's in Abraham, all families of the earth will be blessed. All families of the earth. There is the promise. And then some years later, recorded in chapter 17, you'll remember this, God makes a covenant with Abraham, and he gives him a new name, Abraham, meaning father of a multitude. And he restates the promise. He says, I will establish my covenant between me and you, between me and you and your seed after you in their generations for an everlasting covenant to be a God to you. And to your seed after you. He restates this to the seed. See, the descendants, the seed. And then last week, Ian was speaking about when Abraham nearly sacrificed his son Isaac. And at the end of that chapter, God says, by myself I've sworn, said the Lord, that in blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven. And as the sand which is upon the seashore, and, highlight, in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. And it's in that seed, as we shall see, Paul talks about it, we recognize the person of Jesus Christ. All nations of the earth shall be blessed. So, having read now chapter 25, we begin to see, don't we, that Abraham did have children. Okay, he had two sons, Ishmael and Isaac, we know about. And at this stage, we learn that there were more. I've written them down here. Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. And then the story goes on and mentions some of the tribes and nations, the Asherites, the Letushites, the Lumites. This is why I got David Suchet to read it. It's really good if you recommend it. And then, of course, the Midianites. They were competitors, if you follow the story down. The Midianites were competitors in the land of Canaan later on in the story, in the time of Moses and Joshua, through the judges and into the kings. It was the Midianites that Gideon, you remember the story of Gideon and the pots and the flames and stuff? Gideon, it was the Midianites that he was coming up against. So all these people, all these tribes and nations, and that's, of course, is just part of it, because Isaac had Jacob and Esau. Esau himself became a great kingdom. Edom features a lot in the Old Testament. All these people, all these tribes and nations could rightly and legitimately say, Abraham is our father. That's right, isn't it? The promises of God apply to us. We are his children. We are his seed. But, and this is where we need to follow the line of the story. The line of promise is actually much narrower than that. Remember when Abraham left everything that he owned to Isaac? Just park that thought. And then we find a couple of chapters later that God repeats his promise, this time to Isaac. And I will make your seed multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto your seed all these countries. And in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Three further chapters down, chapter 28, this time it's Jacob, Isaac's son. You remember Jacob goes, has to run away from home for various behaviors, and he stops and he dreams a dream, and there's a ladder going up to heaven and there's angels going to and from. If you're familiar with the story, that's it. And God speaks to Jacob. Behold, the Lord stood above it, the ladder, that is, and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, the God of Isaac. The land where you're lying, I'll give it to you and to your seed, and your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and will spread to the broad, you will spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, to the south, and so on. And, at the end, in you and in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Promise restated. The seed down the line was Jesus. But you see, we're seeing that the promise, the covenant, it's a line. It's not quite like the root of a tree which spreads ever wider and wider. There's a line that follows a thread down the generations. Because even the 12 tribes of Israel, 12 tribes of Israel, Jacob's sons, 10 of those were not included. We learnt this, didn't we, the other night, looking at 2 Kings. 10 tribes were lost to history in the sort of annihilation that took place when the Assyrians and the Babylonians came and wiped out Israel about 600 BC. Really, only Judah was left. The one tribe, Benjamin possibly two. Judah and Benjamin, 2 tribes. So, by the time you get to Jesus, you know, the nation of Israel, the entire nation, is actually down to just a sixth of what it was in terms of tribal names. And the Jews of Jesus' time were mistaken when they placed their faith on being the recipients of the promise and the covenant just in the fact that they were children of Abraham. And Jesus had to correct them a number of times. John the Baptist, beginning of John the Baptist, you remember, beginning of Matthew's Gospel, John the Baptist is preaching to the crowds who come out to be baptized in the River Jordan, and he says this: bring forth, therefore, fruits worthy of repentance. Think not to say within yourselves, we have Abraham to our father, for I say to you that God is able of these stones to raise up children to Abraham. The line of descent was not the key. In John's Gospel, I think John is one of the, John wrote his Gospel, you remember, late in his life, probably 50, 60 years after Jesus' death, and he had the perspective of looking back over those years and seeing how Jesus' life had impacted and then grown, seeing the establishment of the church, the effect on people's lives. And he had that historical perspective. And when he recorded an incident where Jesus was having an exchange with a group of Jewish people in the temple, where Jesus contradicts their confidence that their relationship with God is dependent on them being the seed of Abraham. They say, we're the seed of Abraham, we're okay. And Jesus says, no. It's not on the basis that they were of Abraham's bloodline. And you remember in the introduction to his gospel, in the first chapter, he says this: but as many as received him, Jesus, but as many as received Jesus, to them he gave the power, the authority, the right, to them he gave the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. That is the promise, to be born of God. You see, not of blood, not of bloodline, not of, you're not a Christian because You are descended from Abraham. You're not a Christian because you're British or French or Irish or Italian. That doesn't qualify. It's not your bloodline. Nor of the will of the flesh. It's not your parents. You're not a Christian because your parents were Christians. It doesn't work like that. Nor of the will of man. You can't decide. You can't train to be a Christian. You can't be qualified as a Christian. It's not something you do. The will of man doesn't come into it. It's being born of God. That is the security. That is the safety. It's a work that God does, which is for us today. And I want to close this morning with the Apostle Paul. He was writing to the church in Rome, in the book of Romans. How about that? And he was writing about the problem that the Jewish Christians faced, because they are and were and are the earthly line of the descendants of Abraham. In that sense, in the natural sense, they're the seed of Abraham. And Paul, in chapters 9 through to 11, is addressing how to address their long-standing belief that their bloodline to Abraham was their security, that it was that gave them the right to be the children of God, as against the new covenant through Jesus, which allows for all who believe to be born as God's children. And he writes this. You see that? Yeah. He writes this: for they are not all Israel who are of Israel. Two Israels here. One is the spiritual Israel, the children of God. Okay, there's those who have inherited the God's promise, the spiritual Israel. And then there's the physical Israel, the nation of Israel, the descendants of Abraham. They are not all Israel who are of Israel. He opens that up a little bit in the next sentence. Nor are they all children, because they are the seed of Abraham. You see, we've seen that. Abraham had Ishmael. He had all these other sons. He had lots of sons, 8, maybe load more. There were lots of people who were the seed of Abraham. But God says, in Isaac, your seed shall be called. There was one. It's the child of promise, which Paul expounds, and it's a big subject: election, promise, huge thing, which we can't get into this morning. That is, he says, those who are the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God, but the children of the promise are counted as the seed. And that is you, and that is me this morning. That is the wonder of this gospel. That which God planted and set in motion all those years ago in the Garden of Eden has worked its way down faithfully. God's promises are true. We sang it this morning. Down to today, to you and me and those around us. This is just a massive encouragement. For me it is. If you believed in Jesus Christ as your Saviour, you are included. Isn't that a wonderful thing? You are counted as the seed of Abraham. God has given you the right to become his child, born of him. That's the promise. That's the covenant. That is the guarantee. God is closer to us than our breath, Ian quoted this morning. That is the God who's with us this morning. And that plan that started all those years ago in Eden has come down today to Warwick. It's great, isn't it? As Charles Wesley wrote, this came to mind just as I was thinking this through last night. One of his hymns, I think it's Over a Thousand Tongues to Sing, he writes this. And I love the way Wesley uses the present tense in this song. He says, he breaks the power of cancelled sin, debt free. He breaks the power of cancelled sin. He sets the prisoner free. His blood can make the foulest clean. His blood avails for me. Present. His blood avails for me today, now, right here. It works. Isn't that a great thing? We're going to sing. If the music team will come. I have been born again into your family. Your blood flows through my veins. I am no longer a slave to fear. I am a child of God. Do you want to come and sing it? Yeah, and look, I just want this morning to be a real blessing. I don't know where you are in your Christian walk at all. If you want to think or talk or pray about this, come and see me. There'll be a prayer team. I'm not quite sure who's on it. Ron and Susanna will be over in the corner afterwards. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Let's pray for you. The power of sin is broken. That is such a wonderful thing. And you're free. And I wouldn't want anybody to go away feeling burdened. You need to go away debt-free. Okay.